Racing's important to men who live well. Racing, it's life. Anything that happens before or after, just waiting.
Drive flat out.
Time Le Mans winner, three-time Daytona 24-hour winner, two-time World Sports Car champ.
What is so
You're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Driving faster than anyone else.
Michael?
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Running your computers at Google Tan Talk 1340.com. You can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfStreamMotorsports.com, and you can find out all about us. And if you missed any of our past shows, don't forget to check out our website, NostalgicRadioandCars.com, where you can listen to all 600 and some odd shows. Anyway, good evening, everybody. Juan, you got your ears on? Good evening, Juan. Actually, you can turn the music down now. That's okay. We're good. So Juan's helping out today. Matt's on vacation or somewhere. And Ed is helping him out in there. And so this should be an interesting show. So anyway, excuse me. I still have my cough. It comes and it goes, and I can't figure this whole thing out. Anyway, so we got, it's still Women in History Month, so we have a lovely lady coming on here a little bit this evening. She's going to talk a little bit about racing and stuff like that, so we're looking forward to having her on. And, excuse me. Anyway, so this weekend, let's see, did I go to anything this weekend? No, actually, I was supposed to go to a couple car shows. There was an armature event over in Tampa, I didn't go to that. And then there was another Mustang show, and I didn't go to that. And the reason why, it's a long story. And it has to do with this cough. And so I will tell you that there's certain medication that you should not take because it doesn't react well with your body. It's kind of like that one scene in Red October. The body don't react well to bullets. Well, my body didn't react well to certain medications. So it kind of sidelined me a little bit. But I did mark my territory from Tampa to Clearwater. So at least people know I was here. Anyway, that's another note for another day. Anyway, so, but I did do something kind of interesting. I went out and something I always like to do is, of course, back in the junkyard days, I used to go around and I just like to, you know, when fuel was cheaper, it was no big deal. But I would just hop in my rollback, and I would just kind of hit the countryside. Well, when I lived down in St. Pete, it was different, particularly or in Pinellas County. Excuse me. We used to basically just kind of like drive around on weekends, Saturdays, because everybody's got their garage door open. And because we're in a truck, and you cruise St. Pete, and you got all these alleyways down there, you just never know. It's potluck. You never know what you might find. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a show one time with a bunch of guests, just guys like myself that just go around beating the streets. And you just be amazed at the stuff that you turn up, you know. In the old days, it was kind of cool because, well, when in the alleys back in the 80s and 90s, particularly 70s, 80s, there was just all kinds of stuff down there. And it wasn't really worth anything, you know. I mean, you'd find sports cars, muscle cars, just all kinds of stuff. In fact, I remember over here behind Searstown, when it was here in town, Searstown, which was on Missouri Avenue, there was a neighborhood back in there. A friend of mine lived there. And every time we'd go over to his house, I mean, I've said this before on the show. I think I've talked about this on the Valens list, and they'll probably remember the story because they'll say, not that story again. And,
yes, the story again.
Anyway, in that neighborhood back there, there was a Grabber Blue 70 Boss 302 Cougar. There was countless B-body Mopars, you know, Roadrunners, GTXs, Chevelles. Just about everybody had a Chevelle, 5, 6, and 7 Chevrolets. They were just loaded in that neighborhood. Just it's kind of weird because, you know, everybody was kind of in the cars. They were cheap. They weren't a lot of money. And, you know, I mean, they were just, some were nice, some were beaters. And so, but it was pretty cool. And there's some sports cars and stuff. But there's three cars in particular that were over there. Besides, four, actually, including the Boss 302 Eliminator. And original owner bought it at Skerritt down in St. Pete. In fact, I tried to buy it one time, and the guy says, "Nah, I can't let you have that car." I've heard that story before, too. "Nah, you're a 16, 17-year-old kid. You might get killed in this thing. This thing's pretty fast." Now, Boss Rio 2 is quick, but not fast. A 70Z28 would chase down St. Pete. Same thing. "Nah, it's one-owner car, sitting in Maitland in a single-car garage down there, down south side, south of 49th Street there in one of those little neighborhoods." Nice original car, houndstooth interior, yellow car. I didn't like the vinyl top that was on it, but it was a rally sport car. Bought new at Ross Chevrolet down there. And I can't sell you that car because it's too fast. No, in this particular case, the guy wouldn't sell me the car because he says, "No, I can't sell you the car because you're a dealer and you're going to sell it and make money." And I said, "You're right, I am a dealer. I'm not going to take that away from you, but I'm a wrecking yard kind of dealer, but I actually want the car." "No, I hear you're a Ford guy." "Yeah, I am a Ford guy, that's true too, but I like 70 Z28, 70 and a half, particularly RS, because my friend Rock had a 70 SS RS back when we were in high school. And blue car, kind of like a marina blue interior, 4-speed, with a 12-bolt under it. And I think he had a 300 horse, 350, maybe even a little bit more. But it was a good running little car, and I just could not get over how well that car handled. And but also in that neighborhood, you drive by this one guy's picket. Well, it wasn't even a picket fence. It was just kind of like a 6-foot wooden fence, you know, those slat fences that they have that you buy at Home Depot. Or back in those days, you bought it at Scotty's. A little bit later, might have been Builder Square or whoever. Anyway, so there was these two wings that you would see. One was reddish-orange, I think, and the other one was yellow. So this guy had, and I think there was a third one back there, but it was a project in progress. But he had one Daytona 500, Charger Daytona 500, I think that's what it, 500. And then he also had a Superbird in there. And I think there was another Superbird project car. Now, what are the odds of, you know, finding three of these? And they were sitting outside, you know. And so we would go over there every once in a while. The guy would never let us see the cars. I do not know, in all the years that I've been in Pinellas County, and I'm going to say this would have been, see, I was driving in 73. Rock moved over in 73. So 73, 74, 75, 76, 77. I don't think those cars ever came out of that backyard. And then one day they were magically gone. Trans Ams, there was a couple Trans Ams in that neighborhood. But one car in particular I did try to buy. My friend Billy owned it. And that was and it was sitting right out in the front yard. I mean, there was no garage to this house. It was just a small little house. And what used to be a garage was converted to a bedroom, I guess. But in the laundry room, he had the Boss 429, a white 69, early Boss 429, with a 2-speed Honda drive unit in it. Okay, bought new at Grant Ford, sitting there. And it was just a really, really cool car. And I tried to buy that car, and it wouldn't sell. And then finally, one day, he got it running. But anyway, but I remember going over to the house, looking at the car, and looking it all over, and I was crawling all over it, and I was just like, I couldn't get over it. And we walked into his laundry room, and the laundry room, there's cylinder head over here, an intake manifold over there, piston over here, rod over there, push rod laying here, rocker arm over there, you know, valve covers here, oil pan there, you know, that kind of stuff, and it was like everywhere. I remember one time I was in, long and short, we got it running, and then he just caught me at a time, I just bought something, and I think I just bought a Shelby. Yeah, my 69 Shelby. I just bought it. And finally, he gets this thing running. Of course, I wanted the Shelby more anyway. By the way, which I still have, 69 convertible. And it's in pieces. Don't ever take a car apart, because if you take a car apart, you'll never get it back together. And I'm here to attest to that, because that's a bad thing. Anyway, if it runs and drives, just leave it alone, fix it, make it go, and you're fine. Or buy a done car, one of the two. But anyway, so he caught me at a weak moment. I just didn't have any spare money, and then I kind of thought about it, forgot about it, thought about it, forgot about it, and I accidentally forgot about it, and then I blew it and missed it. And then get this. This is, they're talking about how weird stories are. So then I finally wanted to chase the car down. So Billy told me he sold to this guy that used to be a guy over somewhere on Date City or whatever it was. It was a guy that used to build motors for Benny Parsons, the NASCAR guy. Then this guy bought the car. Then he painted it red, sold it to some guy in Georgia. I actually tracked this car down. Then it went to another guy in Georgia. Then it wound up some guy that owned a laundromat just someplace, I don't know, on the other side of Atlanta. So I tracked the car down again. So then I finally get a hold of this guy, and that guy wasn't real helpful with information, but then he told me that he rolled the car and crashed it. Okay, so now fast forward. This is like sometime in the early 80s. In the late 90s, they used to have an event over in Charlotte at the Speedway, Charlotte Motor Fair, and it was every year. It was huge. I mean, the whole infield. Just to give you an idea how big the car show and swap meet was, the whole Charlotte Motor Speedway infield was full, so full that it was overflowing on the outside of the racetrack, okay? So I'm there with my buddy Hank, and he had a vendor spot inside, but his van was outside, and he'd run back and forth and get some goodies. I had driven up there. I actually had my rollback, because whenever I used to do long-distance trips, I would always take the truck and a little bit of money in my pocket in case I found something really cool, which I did. I found some gas pumps and miscellaneous stuff on the way up and down. And so anyway, this guy rolls in with this wadded-up Mustang. And so we walked over and looked at it, and it was a Georgia license plate on the truck and trailer. And I said, interesting. So I started looking at the car, and I noticed that it was a wrecked Boss 429 that at one point may have been white, looked like it white because it had white floorboards, but the outside of the car was painted kind of like red. And it was wrecked. It was clearly wrecked and rolled, and the guy was just selling the chassis. There was no motor, no training, no interior, no nothing, no fenders, just a wadded-up shell, but potentially rebuildable. And so it wasn't like it hit a tree and was mutilated. It looked like it glanced off a tree and rolled down a hill, and who knows what happened, you know, because if you've ever been to Georgia, it's kind of hilly. Probably laying there in that Kuju stuff or whatever that stuff's called. Somebody will correct me on that. So at any rate, there that car was on the back of the trailer, and I think the guy was asking, I don't know, some crazy amount of money for it back then. I think it was like $7,500 back then. There was nothing there. I mean, the rear end wasn't even in it. It had a rear end under it. But Boss 429s have big 9-inch rear ends and different sway bars. All that stuff was off. Front, it was rolling. I think somebody might have took all the disc brakes off and had drum brakes and something like that. But here's the story. So I saw this car in the early 70s. It was sold new at Grant Ford. And then years later, I ran into the guy that actually bought that car originally, had it, and then sold it to another guy who then eventually sold it to Billy. So what are the odds? So I ran across the original owner of that car, and the reason, and as the story goes, it was this guy's cousin that bought the car. He couldn't afford to make the payments, so the other cousin bought the car. He had the car for a little bit, tweaked on a little bit, and then he sold it to this other guy, and then he blew the engine up, sold it to Billy. Then Billy had it for about 3-4 years, and finally he builds the motor, and then he sells it to this guy that's an engine builder for Benny Parsons, and then the car winds up in Georgia two or three owners later, then winds up getting crashed, and then about 15 years later, it shows up at Charlotte Motor Fair. So it's, and I'm going to wager and say that car, I don't remember what the KKK number was on it, was probably on the road again. Now, here's what was interesting. Boss 429s have a KKK number, car craft number. Like mine was, for example, 1399. My friend's was, that they just sold here, believe it or not, at Meekum's was 1400. So, but they're just like a little decal thingy. And but very rarely, some of them, and there's no rhyme or reason, they had an actual football looking kind of emblem that was actually brass or something like that with the number etched in it or engraved in it. And this car had that engraving it, that number engraved in it. The problem was is that when the car rolled up at Charlotte, it had no motor, no training, no nothing, and it was hard to pick out what it was. So Anyway, I think what we're going to do now, hey, Juan, you got you know how to cue up a song and get all that stuff. So let's play a little Led Zeppelin for everybody. And here's an oldie bit of goodie. This is actually one of the songs we played very, very early on in nostalgic and the history of nostalgic radio cars. It's called Good Times, Bad Times by Led Zeppelin. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. You're tuned into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. And you're tuned into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. I always like that song. That song actually came out in 1969. So it was, I think, one of the first. So I was living in Europe at the time. I was a kid going to school in Vienna at an international school. And this friend of mine, I'm trying to think what his name was. He actually looked like Robert Plant. And of course, that hairstyle was kind of like, you know, the thing. If you look at early you know, Led Zeppelin. Of course, Deep Purple was big back then. I was a big Deep Purple fan too. Anyway, so I was, a friend of mine, his parents had a typewriter, and before the days of computers, typewriter and Büromaschinen, as it's called in German, is you know, like typewriters and office equipment and stuff like that, repair shop. Yeah, they actually repaired typewriters, believe it or not, and then other things, and sold pens, pencils, paper, you know, stencils, protractors, you know, all that kind of cool stuff, which slide rulers, which most people today don't even know what that is because they pick up this little device right here, and this pretty much says it all right here, okay? It's called a smartphone. Question is, how smart is it, really? But I call it a phone snitch. You know, it's basically a GPS device for Uncle Sam, or for Crooked Sam these days. But at any rate, having said that, so we were sitting there, and it was kind of like a lunch break, and I was standing there with Peter, this one guy, and I can't remember the guy's name that looked like Robert Plant. But anyway, so he had the album, the brand new Led Zeppelin album they were talking about, and I thought, how cool was that? Of course, you know, even as a kid, we got into music back in those days. We all had records, okay. And that's the first Led Zeppelin song, and that is my favorite Led Zeppelin song that I heard, still like. Anyway, all right, so having said that, all right, so we're talking about cars and how I used to get in and roll around and stuff like that. Well, over the weekend, I had to run up to some little village called Tallahassee nearby. So while I was up there, I was kind of, you know, scrounging around, which I have a tendency to do. But when you go to these swap meets and places like that, you meet a lot of people. So you network, right? Well, there's a guy up there that had some parts. I'm not going to mention what they were because I'm a car guy. So I'm not revealing my sources. But I'll just say he was in the Tallahassee area and he had a bunch of parts. So I said, hey, I might be up there. If you're not too far away and you got some time, I'd like to come by and check out what you got. He said, sure, come on by. So I did. Give me directions. Let me tell you about GPS. Okay, I got to tell you a great GPS story. Okay, so, and then I'll go back to my story. A couple months ago, I was down in Sarasota. We were down in Naples with my friend, right? Now, I have an Android. I'm an Android guy. Okay, he has an Apple. Okay, and there's always the debate whether Apple or Android or Google or whoever, you know, gets you in the right place at the right time. Apple is notorious for running you around in circles and taking the long way. Google will generally get you pretty close. However, having said that, if you're, you know, if you have an ounce of a brain, you can look at a Google map and say, okay, this is where I'm supposed to go. But if I look at this map, because I can read maps and roads and stuff like that, I can see, wait a minute, this looks like a shorter distance. Why is the Google GPS tramp running me all over town when I could go north and south? I mean, I can go north and then hang a right and go way, way, way out wherever I got to go, and I'd be there. But anyway, so he's got Apple, and I'm on my thing, and I'm saying, well, this thing's running this the wrong way. No, Apple's the way to go. And I go, no, your phone thing's screwed up. We're not doing that. So I started screaming at his phone in junkyard jargon. I kid you not, and call in, let me know, text me, whatever, if anybody's ever had this happen, that GPS phone tramp actually goes, don't talk to me that way. I kid you not. And I said, holy crap, that's getting ridiculous, because if, you know, this whole AI thing's going around. But we tried to do it again. So this time we really cussed, but I couldn't get her to do it again. But she literally said, I swear on a stack of Qurans, Bibles, that she said, don't talk to me that way. Verbatim. I go, wow. Anyway, all right, so long story short, this guy gave me GPS directions. He says it may or may not show on GPS. It'll get you close. That's fine. Well, by the time I got down this dirt road, that dirt road, this bumpy road, this whole road full of potholes, and I was like, dang, I don't have any ammunition or guns with me, or bow and arrows, or anything, but I knew I was out in the woods. Sure enough, there's a clearing, and there's all these really cool old cars, just not one or two, but like lots and lots and lots and lots. So I parked my van there, and I got out, said hi, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to get attacked by lions, tigers, and bears, and rattlesnakes, and whatever else might be out there in the wilderness, in nature. You know, things that like to prey on humans, and gators, you know, things like that. But there wasn't a lake nearby, I don't think, but there could have been a creek or two, and that doesn't preclude a moccasin or cottonmouth, as they call them here in Florida, or up there, or a gator to kind of snack on you a little bit. Anyway, long and short of it, he had some pretty cool stuff, and it's just amazing, you know, I mean, the stuff that was up there, signs, car parts, just bicycles, pieces of motorcycles, wheels, tires, hoods, doors, fenders, you know, little trinkets, little knickknacks. I mean, this, you know, in the next 3 to 5 years, as we get older, and I don't think the hobby's going to go away. I don't think it'll ever go away. But the demographics are going to change. The demand's going to change. You got to wonder what's going to happen to all this old crap, you know. And, of course, naturally, I picked up a few extra pieces that I certainly didn't need, but I did. I don't. Maybe. Kind of want to. But at any rate, so I just added to my junk pile. But I'm getting a little bit better at it. I'm actually selling crap, and then I'm replacing. I should be just selling, and then selling, and then selling. But it doesn't quite work like that, because it's a sickness. It's a disease. Just like he was joking. He said, yeah, man, I'm the local dude here with the dope, and you're here for a fix. Well, the dope's the car parts, and the fix is the car parts. So that's how that works. Anyway, so we have to kind of, you know, put some slang on it. Anyway, on that note, I think Juan is my new board engineer this evening. Good evening, Juan. How are you? Say hi to our friends and neighbors and listeners. And where are you from, Juan?
I'm from Colombia.
Colombia. I was just telling him earlier, that's a long walk. But anyway, so how long have you been in the United States?
Around 40 years.
Oh, 40 years. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then that's you got no excuse.
No excuse.
Yeah, okay. Did you go out and vote for Trump today? I want to make sure, because today's the... Okay. Yeah. Anyway, well, you know what Colombia and Venezuela and all those countries are like down there. We need a strong person here, not this wussy we got in the White House.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, all right. Well, Juan, thank you. I appreciate all your efforts you're doing this evening. And go ahead and fire up the stereo. Let's start the music here a little bit. Let's call our guest. And then we'll play another little clip, and then we'll talk cars. All right, we're back, and you're tuned into Nostalgia Band and Cars. It's time to introduce our guest for the evening. This lady is a very special lady because she likes cars, and that's very, very important. And she is, well, she's been at it for a long time. She likes cars. She likes racing cars. She is the chief of grid for the SCCA, Sports Car Club of America, Central Florida region. And I'm going to welcome Sammy Ronshausen to the show, and she's going to tell us what the chief of grid does exactly and give us some really, really cool stories about some of the SCCA events that have taken place in the southeastern part of the United States. So, without further ado, welcome to the show. Sammy, how are you this evening?
Hi, I'm great, Robert.
So, tell us what the chief of grid does.
Well, the grid staff is the last safety check before the cars go out onto the track.
Mm-hmm.
So we line the cars up, check to make sure the drivers have their helmets strapped, their seat belts are tight, their gloves are on, they don't have any liquid dripping from the bottom of the car, and then we give them the signal to start their engines, and assuming we get a thumbs up from everybody, out onto the track they go.
Okay. Now, is there any kind of training for this?
Yes, actually. We do a driver school every year that we use as a training ground for new staff members.
Okay.
Now, as well as teaching people how to be race car drivers.
Okay, so this is all in... So, but as far as if you're a corner worker, or if you're on the grid, or if you're a tech inspector, or anything like that, or a flag person, you have to basically go through some sort of a SCCA training, no different than I do as a potential driver to get my driver's license, correct?
Correct. Some of it is on-the-job training. For instance, if I have a new person that's joined in February and wants to work the grid, then we do on-the-job training with them. I put them with an experienced grid person, and they teach them the ropes.
Okay.
If we have a school coming up, for instance, we have one in July, and I have somebody that signed up in June, then we use the driver's school as a real intense training session.
Okay. So on the grid, how are you staffed on the grid?
Well, it depends on the time of the year. I do have a number of snowbirds that come down and help me in the fall and in the winter. The summer tends to be kind of light, and it's kind of hard to grid 75 cars with four people.
Ooh.
Lots of times I'll pull a worker, a driver, who is not going to be racing in that group to come over and help.
Okay. So what exactly, so besides make sure, it's kind of like a second tech inspection in a way, I mean like a quickie, you know, like you said, you know, make sure I got my helmet on, got my visor down, got my gloves on, got my safety restraints on, nothing hanging down below my car, no fluids leaking, so, and then you stage me, correct?
Correct. And so then, for practice and qualifying, they line up nose to tail.
Okay.
For a race, we're given grid sheets by timing and scoring, and the cars then back into a position based on their fastest time.
Okay. Now, we're talking SCCA now, okay? So now, do you
Correct.
Work strictly SCCA, or do you help out, let's say, with HSR, with SVRA, anything that's going on, let's say, the 12-hour Sebring, or is that completely different?
Well, pretty much not. The 12 hours of Sebring, St. Peter Grand Prix, the 24 hours of Daytona do not use SCCA grid or pit staff anymore.
Oh, really?
We still are using flaggers, but they have their own staff to grid and pit and do timing now.
Okay. So give us, let's just take a basic SCCA race. Okay, now SCCA, we have different classes, but we'll get into that in a minute. So if you're there, we got the race. How many people, and let's say Sebring, because that's probably the track I've been at the most myself. Spun out and then some. I love the carousel. It beats the crap out of you, and turn one scares the crap out of me. So, you know, but the back, the
and
rest
turn
of
turn 17 is real bumpy.
It is real bumpy. Yes, I mean that's where you just your car just kind of skips along there. You better hold your line. Well, you can't hold your line because your car just bounces around, you know. And turn one, I remember it was Norton one time was telling us when we were one of the vintage races. He says, "Watch out for the monster in turn one." Well, it took a while to figure out what he was. You don't know what he's talking about until you actually drive the course. So basically, correct. The monster in turn one is if somebody, because you can't see around the corner, if somebody has a problem there, they're stopped, they're sideways or whatever, that's the monster in turn one. So everybody used to make fun of me because I would go wide at turn one. But that could be a problem too. But if you either got to hug that wall, which is scary, or you got to stay wide and just kind of let it drift out a little. But at least you have a shot because you can see what's around the corner. But nonetheless, so when you have when you set up there for SCCA and you're getting ready to do the event, what does the staff consist of? How many people? Just kind of give our listeners kind of a feel for how you set that up.
Okay. Well, again, it depends on the number of cars in a group. We have numerous classes that run together, mostly based on engine size. So okay. You have small bore cars, large bore cars, like the GT cars, kind of look like NASCAR cars. Then we have the open-wheel cars that sometimes have all of the open wheels in one group. So from Formula V's and 500s, I think they're called F600s now, to the Formula Atlantics and the Formula Mazdas, Formula E's, they can all run in one group, but they race within their class all in the same group. So depending on the number of cars, I can grid 25 cars with three people, 65 or 75 group cars, I really need 6 to 8 people.
Okay. And now,
we can put as many as 100 cars out at Sebring.
Wow.
And we have. In our January race, we had 85 spec Miatas.
Oh.
Yeah, just think about that.
Well, yeah, when you say Miata and you say spec, I think of a bunch of crazy guys out there on the track. You know, the Miata, because that's the least expensive car, well, besides IT, but that's, you know, they're relatively affordable, and everybody's a race car driver. Everybody's Pernelli Jones and George Fulmer and all those guys, right?
Yes. Yes. Now, as a side note to that, yeah. SCCA does discourage any kind of touching. So metal to metal, fiberglass to fiberglass, we don't like that. And if it happens and it looks like it's on purpose, those drivers will be called to the steward's room.
That's called black flagging, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, now, since we're talking about flags, why don't you go through the flags for us real quick? See, let us know what they are. I know what they are, but for my listeners, let's go ahead.
Okay. Well, we don't really use flags on the grid, of course.
Right.
But the first one, the first session of any race weekend, every group gets a white flag, and that is just to notify the drivers where the flag stations are.
Okay.
So, because we always have new drivers coming in, and the flag stands do move a little bit occasionally,
mm-hmm.
So that gives the drivers an idea of where the stations are.
Now,
then they get a green... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, all right, so a flag stand is not necessarily a corner worker, correct?
Yes and no.
Okay.
We consider them all corner workers, but we do have some off-side workers. So, for instance, at Sebring, on the full course, we do have a turn 17. We are now staffing a 17 bridge, so right at the crossover bridge. And then we do have a 17A, which is on the far side of the turn, because the workers at turn 17 can't see around the corner.
Right.
So it doesn't match the turn numbers. It's based on where we find the most activity, really.
Okay, gotcha. All right, next flag. Okay.
So, you have the green flag.
Okay. That means go, right?
Yeah. Correct. And it particularly with the large groups, green flag for the front also means green flag for the back. So a lot of times nowadays, the drivers are hooked up to pit crews that will tell them that the green flag has flown if they're towards the back of the grid. So they may be just coming into turn 17, but the front of the group has already gotten the green flag.
Okay.
So they know they can accelerate.
Okay.
The next one would be a waving yellow flag.
Okay.
Which indicates there's an incident.
Okay.
Somewhere in front of them.
Okay.
And they do not necessarily need to slow down, but they cannot pass another vehicle during a yellow.
Okay. So that's caution.
Correct. And if it's a, rather than a waving, if it's a standing yellow flag, that typically indicates that all the drivers have already seen the incident at least once.
Okay.
But the vehicle or the tires or whatever's in the middle of the track is still there.
Okay.
All right, so we have two yellow flags. Sometimes we do a double yellow all around, which means there's an incident covering most of the track. We typically will send a safety car out for a full course yellow, and we're going to try and clear the incident without stopping the race.
So now do you have to send the pace car out and have everybody just kind of follow you around a little bit too?
Correct.
Okay.
So the rule of thumb is when we call it a safety car after the race has started.
Okay.
If the lights are on, the cars have to follow the safety car.
Okay.
So if the pace car goes off track and goes to McDonald's, they should all follow the safety car to McDonald's.
Okay. All right.
Every once in a while, particularly with new drivers, they don't actually get that right away. So the idea is if we need to bring the entire field into pit road, the safety car will leave its lights on so that everybody can follow the safety car in.
Okay.
Okay. Then we have a black flag.
Okay.
The start line also has a number board.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to call a specific car into the pits, they wave a black flag with a number board with that car's number on it.
Okay.
If we do a full course black flag, so every turn is waving a black, everybody needs to come into the pits because there's something wrong.
Okay.
Then we have a red flag. Now, we try not to use a red flag a lot, but what that means is you need to pull to the side of the track and stop where you are, but you need to do it safely.
Okay.
We don't want them to pull off onto the grass because hot cars and grass can burn.
Oh, yeah.
But they are to pull over, hopefully within sight of a flag station. Whenever the incident, whatever it may be, has cleared, the flaggers will wave them in, whether they're going into the pits or whether they're going to get a green flag at the start stand. Something serious has happened. That's the only reason we would use a red flag.
So that basically stops the race.
Correct. And the time does stop.
Okay.
Until they get a green flag or it's checkered.
All right. So will they send the safety vehicle out again for everybody to gather behind them? And you can't change position, right?
Correct. You cannot. Sometimes we do. Depends on where the incident is and whether the safety car can get to the lead car.
Okay.
Okay. And then we have one other flag, which is a debris flag. And that, it just lets the drivers know that there's something on the track somewhere and to be watchful.
And what color is that flag?
It's blue and yellow.
That's the one that's blue with a yellow stripe, right?
Diagonal. Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we do use the white flag if there's a slow-moving vehicle or if we have an emergency vehicle on the track.
Oh.
So a wrecker or something like that that is working their way through traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Each turn will wave the white flag as it goes by so that drivers coming up on it know that there's a slow-moving vehicle.
Okay. All right, doesn't the white flag also mean last lap, too?
Yes, although in the SCCA, we just started using that a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So we are utilizing it now, but we didn't for a very long time.
Okay. So now, let's just say at Sebring, what would be the total staff count for the track? So between the grid workers, the corner workers, the tech guy, the starter, how many people total would you say?
Well, if we include our support staff, probably 50 on a regular race weekend.
All right, and these are
all... So average number of cars... like for the short course that we use, we don't need as many because there aren't as many turns.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, I can only put 42 cars out per group. So I could probably get away with 5 or 6 workers for the entire weekend. On the full course, we can put out 105 actually.
Wow.
And so, and you've got 17, well, we don't actually have 17 turns. Really more like 15 turns, and each turn needs to have at least 2 people. And then you've got pits, which has at least a minimum of 3. Timing and scoring, a minimum of 3, but they really would like more than that. And then the grid, we go anywhere between 4 and 10 people, depending on what time of the year and the race. And then we've got beverage people, and we have registration people, and then we have the stewards who actually run the event for us, and there's anywhere between 6 and 10 of them.
Now, is most of the staff volunteer?
Yes, we're all volunteer.
Okay. And so, like, how did you get started in it?
Well, my husband met a gentleman who was a member of the SCCA, mm-hmm. and we're going back to the 1985, 1986,
mm-hmm.
and he joined. He came home one night and said, "I've signed us up for the SCCA." And then a couple months later, came home with a Pinto. This is going to be my race car.
Yay, Pinto!
Yay! I was not happy. It did take him 6 months to build the car. And his first year racing, I did not go to the track at all. And then we did a worker school, which he dragged me to. And way back in 1986, the St. Pete Grand Prix was in the fall,
right,
rather than the spring. And I got a postcard asking if I wanted to work, since I had been to the worker school.
Oh.
And I worked the St. Pete Grand Prix in 1986 as a corner worker and knew almost immediately that I did not want to do that. It was a little too close to the action for me.
Okay.
And we had had some friends that came and stayed with us for that race. And the husband worked the grid for the club races and invited me to come work on the grid. And I've been there 35 years.
Wow. That's super. All right, so now let's talk a little bit about, well, you actually had a chance to meet a notable celebrity through your SCCA stuff. When you were for SCCA, were you just in the Southeast region or Florida region, or how far did you travel?
Yeah, so because I was working what we call a real job,
okay.
I have not done a lot of traveling. Our home tracks are Sebring and Daytona.
Okay.
And I have been to Roebling Road a couple times, which is near Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been to Nelson Ledges near Akron, Ohio, twice.
Okay.
I have not been to Homestead yet because it's a really long drive from here.
How about Road Atlanta?
I have not been there either.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
So one of these notable race car guys that you had a chance to meet was Paul Newman. So tell us about your interaction with Paul Newman.
Mr. Newman used to come down and race with us at our January national race.
Really?
And I had been working the grid about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And the gentleman who was the chief of the grid looked at me and saw Paul's car coming and said, you need to go grid that car. And I said, you want me to grid Paul Newman's car? And he said, yeah, go ahead. You know how to do this. And at that time, we had to direct the cars to back up into their correct positions.
Uh-huh.
And Paul always drove his car to the grid. One of his crew guys did not do that for him. And he got out of his car and shook my hand and thanked me very much for gridding. And wandered off to talk to crew or whatever, and he came and raced with us a couple of times a year for probably the first 10 years that I was working the grid.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And he was a great person. He would come to our socials and interact with other drivers and the corner workers, and that's what we want to see. Is somebody who's interested in the volunteers that are spending their time helping these guys be race car drivers.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, pretty amazing. All right, so let's talk a little bit about SCCA. So you're the grid chief for the SCCA Florida Central region. So if people want to find out more about SCCA, I'll be okay. How do they go about doing that?
So there's lots of ways they can do it. They can go to our website, which is SCCA. No, it's not. It's CFRSCCA.org.
Okay.
Or if they don't live around here, they can go to SCCA.com. And that's the national website. Our home office is in Topeka, Kansas. And there is an SCCA region in every state, including Puerto Rico. They have their own region down there. And you can get information, membership. You can click on a link to join. And it'll just ask you what your zip code is, and we'll put you in the correct region. Or you can designate what region you want to belong to.
Okay. So we got a couple minutes left. So if somebody wants to, it's important to also note that you don't have to be a race car driver to join SCCA. You can be an enthusiast, correct?
That is correct. We're always looking for help in all of the specialties, but you can join, and once you've got a membership card, you can go to any region in the country and sign in as a guest. Of course, every region would prefer you come and volunteer to do something,
uh-huh.
but you do not have to.
Okay. What is the least expensive entry-level vehicle, most economical, that I could drive? You got about a minute.
Ooh. I would say right now, probably the Miatas.
The Miatas?
Yes, and you can find used ones everywhere. I would not recommend starting from scratch because that does increase the cost.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a driver school coming up in July, and we get a lot of questions about that. You do have to provide a car that has passed tech inspection, and you need to have your own uniform and helmet and Hans device and gloves and shoes.
Okay. Other than that, they have, in 20 seconds, 30 seconds, solo autocrossing, real quick.
Absolutely. Solo. We have a very active region. If you go to our website and click on solo, you will get their schedule. Same thing with Rallycross. You can take a streetcar and go over a dirt track. It looks really fun. I haven't tried it yet.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, all right, we're up against the clock here, but Sammy, I want to thank you very much for hanging out with us here, and hopefully I will renew my SCCA membership, and I'll just...
Oh, you should.
I know, I need to. That's why, you know, it was the whole idea of having you on the show, because I wanted to kind of, you know, get this thing going again a little bit, because I started out autocrossing with the Shelby Club, and then the Porsche Club, and a bunch of other guys, and one thing leads to another, then you get out on the track, and you know, you don't have to have a race car, because you have club event racing, where you really just go on the track, and you get seat time. And that's important for those of us that like to drive. So it's not, if you can't afford racing, you can still do some club events and still have fun. And autocrossing, you're really racing against the clock on a pylon course, and you're learning driving control. That's what you're, you know, car control. That's what you're learning, right?
That's correct. And you can always look for Track Night in America. We have done several at Sebring and several at Daytona, typically on the Friday night before our regional event. And you can take your streetcar out on the track.
Oh, super. Now, but the streetcar's got to be teched, right? It's got to make sure you got seatbelts and stuff like that, and you have to have a helmet of some kind, right?
You just need long pants and closed-toed shoes.
Oh, okay.
And a helmet. Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, well, there's the music. That means the checker flag's coming down. Sammy, I want to thank you very much for hanging out with us here at Nostalgia Creating Cars. Look forward to seeing you on the track sometime. Hopefully, I will be one of those guys that you grid. And then I'm going to have an exciting time either at Sebring or Daytona. Looking forward to it.
That would be great. Thanks a lot, Robert.
Thank you. Have a great evening. Thank you. Hey, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgia Creating Cars. Don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Town Talk Radio Network. In the meantime, get out there and drive. Stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
Listen.